Welcome, welcome to another...
The official podcast of The Leaky Cauldron.
The Leaky Cauldron.
The Leaky Cauldron.
You hear that, Ern? The Leaky Cauldron.
Just go! You're wasting time!
Welcome to Pottercast, your number one source for news, theories, discussion and interviews with people from the Potter books and films. I know a small amount myself, having written the books. My name is J.K. Rowling. I am now happy to introduce your hosts, Melissa, John and Sue.
And Frank.
Expelliarmus, and welcome to Harry Potter Podcast, Pottercast number 180. See how special this one is? I called it a Harry Potter podcast before calling it a podcast.
How do you stumble upon that?
Just so you know.
Well, I heard this week, listening to another Potter podcast, that January is a big month for people to start listening to new podcasts.
Really?
So if you're a new listener to Pottercast, we welcome you.
Oh, welcome. Everybody who just bought your iPhones for Christmas. Or your iPods for Christmas.
Welcome. Yes.
This is a podcast about
Welcome to our podcast.
This is a podcast about Harry Potter. Welcome to the show.
There's voices. Oh, Frack, how do you do that? I'm Melissa. With me are John, Sue, and Frack, and we're in for our 180th, week of Harry Potter news, views, and other things with
like
at the end, like Sue's news.
Sue's
news. Oh, and hey, before we do anything this week, we have to hear from a friend at
Audible.
Yay!
This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider in spoken word entertainment. Get a free audiobook download of your choice when you sign up today. Log on to audiblepodcast.com/pottercast today for details. I was going to say, I thought that this episode was brought to you by Bella the Cat. Your friendly cat needs, Bella is here.
Hey, speaking of audiobooks, my book's gonna come out as an audiobook. Harry, a History is coming out as an audiobook. I don't know exactly when. I gotta tell you, did you say that just because I said I don't know when?
I asked. My brain asked a question and waited for a pause.
Well,
and
that's
then
so funny.
And didn't really process what happened, but it knew to be polite rather than logical, so it waited.
Hey. Your brain's like an ADHD child. No, that's, you know, I think I'm ADHD. I don't think it was ever diagnosed. But anyway, it's coming out as an audiobook. I don't know when.
We're all excited for it.
I don't know. I'm excited.
We haven't talked about the news in a
while.
All right,
Sue, we're all excited for the news.
We're trying to catch up with some things that happened this year in 2009, and there's a couple of things from 2008 I want to bring up. But first of all, Mr. Dan Radcliffe starts off our news because you know what he says? He says, "No thanks to Harry Potter, a musical."
Oh, was it already written?
No, but he said that, you know, the rumors have been out there that they should do that. And so he answered a series of questions on, like, Broadway.com or one of those things for while he's doing Equus.
Yeah.
And he said no. He really was he was polite about it, but it was really evident that he did not. He said it would not have my blessings. Let's just say.
Well, you know what? Sorry, Dan. They're making Shrek a musical. They don't need the real Shrek to do it.
I don't even know if he was polite about it. He was refreshingly, bracingly honest. He was like, no, why would they do that? There are many things that would be good as a musical. This would not. Why would they do that? That would not have my blood. Like, he was very, you know, very straightforward. I was like, yeah, Dan, okay, tell us how you feel. Please do. That was good. Also in that interview, which I found hilarious, and you should watch it, the link's on Leaky.
That's awesome.
Do you ever get cold in the theater? And he took it like a pro. He goes, "I think I know what you mean," and the answer is
buddy.
Yes. So cute. You know.
You did.
I saw him yesterday. I saw him in the show yesterday.
Really?
He was fantastic. And
did you actually have Vernon as your old guy actor? See, you're lucky. But we didn't have Vernon.
I did, and he was even better.
We had this crazy understudy who just apparently
that guy who was reading out of a book
script and said perform the show.
So was Dan better in this time around than what he was? I mean, he's been doing it a year now. So do you think he's better?
I think so. And
yeah.
That's a good way to put it.
It was more nuanced. I think, from the first time I saw him, which is good, because that role is, there's hard to have a lot of nuance in that role when the kid commits this violent act, yeah. And you know it's leading towards this intense heightened place, and
right,
it's hard to have that be nuanced, you know. So well, I thought he's quite a young actor.
Cool. And then he's going to fly,
right?
And then he's going to go back like the 7th or 8th, and then he's going to fly back to England and start shooting Deathly Hallows on the 15th. So, if you want to go see.
Boy.
Yeah.
Man, we've been to New York like twice since he's been performing that, and we haven't seen it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he said, I'm going back, and we're going to film it, and we have no idea how long it's going to take to film. It's going to be just the marathon, but we're going to just make sure it's the best film we can possibly make.
Yeah, what are they going to do after that? I mean,
don't matter how long it takes.
It's true.
Very much.
I love to worry about getting...
They will put
like,
them in a
nothing.
Little...
Their lives are over.
...bag and put them on a shelf.
No.
Warehouse.
They're not going on the prop tour, no.
This is a Hermione. Wave, Emma, wave.
Wave, Emma, now. This wax lady looks so alive.
Why is she crying, Mommy?
Why is she
Why is she crying?
We didn't read the fine print of our contract.
Oh, no.
It's like
no.
A Little Mermaid. She signed the contract.
Yes.
They can turn her into the little thingy.
Those gross little seaweedy creatures.
Let Mickey Warner Brothers come out like Ursula. I didn't mean that at all.
No. We love Ursula in the world.
We're just being silly.
Speaking of actors, Tom Felton's back in the news. He plays Draco Malfoy.
Is he fishing again?
No, but you know what he's doing? He's riding a dueling dragon and he's visiting the future home of the Wizarding World of Harry Potter in Orlando. Yeah.
That sounds like fun.
It does.
I love that dueling dragon ride.
Well, I thought this was kind of significant, though, that here is a fairly big name star that's making their first trip to the theme park. I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah, totally.
That's
BNS.
Awesome.
Big name star.
BNS, a big name star.
John!
You can't be a star if you have a big name.
Little
that would
star,
just
like
be star.
Exactly.
Reporter.
Star. I don't know.
No, but you know what? That's a fair comment.
It's true.
It is.
Tom Felton.
Joe the Plumber versus Tom Felton. Tom Felton will win.
It just gave me a lot of hope that they will come back for the, you know, when the park opens and stuff. And I know maybe it's just a fangirl, you know, kind of.
Totally.
Thing.
No, you're right.
You know? I thought that was kind of cool.
Which Harry Potter actor do you think would be most likely to do a summer stint at the park? Yeah. A meet and greet.
Come on, for real. Question?
She would be
is
awesome.
Anna Lynch anywhere?
I thought you were going to say like, that boy, the unknown boy. They would get him in there.
Oh my god, the Make-A-Wish kid?
The Make-A-Wish
kid.
John, that's a world
of all of them. What is the Make-A-Wish kid? I want to roll in Prisoner of Azkaban, where I am the most knowledgeable about ghosts.
It's like touching smoke with your bare hands.
And I want to be there at the end when Harry gets the firebolt.
And freeze frames awkwardly.
We saw some great new pictures from Warner Bros. Release of the Weasley's Wizard Weeza Shop.
Oh.
And they released some new stills. And we also saw a new one of the trio in Slughorn and Three Broomsticks. But Melissa, did you see that picture of the Wizard Shop? Because I thought it looked pretty cool because it said Mayhem Mystery and had the exploding fireworks and the teacups and all that stuff. Can you talk about that or is that too...
Uh-huh.
Oh, were we in the shop at the set? No, we weren't there.
That was
we
actually
that
all,
at all
in China.
Nope, not at all. Yeah, and it looks like...
It does.
Like
I was exactly thinking that because the woodwork and the way the
blocks,
levels on it?
It
and everything were at the center.
Was there any of the skull candy?
There was a skull. If you look closely, there is a skull. There's no, like, shrunken head, but there is a skull in there.
Who let Alfonso back on the set? I don't know. Anything else
shrunken
to do.
Head?
Who let Alfonso back on the set?
I thought there were flyers put up.
I thought we were done with these.
Look out for him.
Threaded skull.
Oh, but I don't know, but I was so impressed because we got it in this huge high-res photo. And if you spend your time, if you're goofy like me, you just spend hours looking at it, and you appreciate how much time those art set and the... You put it into it, and we will never see that in the film, but it was just, it just was marvelous. So if you get a chance, go to our galleries and check that out, because it's wonderful. It's just,
yeah,
I mean, even...
Yeah, I was looking at my phone earlier, and now I'm looking at them bigger on my computer, and, oh, it's so nice. And I like the dapper, nice Fred and George, not all, like, you know, in their nice, spiffy clothing.
We're dapper today.
But did you see, like, on their ties, it's like a glow, like, what do you call those buttons that... Oh, glow. I don't know. Flash. Is that it? No. Is it a type-in? I don't know what it is. It looks like
no,
there's
I don't
a
know.
W.
I thought it was tie-clip.
I know the button, the kind of buttons you're talking about, but I really like them in this shot. It's like they're glowing right through their ties. You know?
Isn't it great?
There's W's all over the place.
Yeah, it's awesome.
And but the like, Weasley's upside down.
There's signs like on the side, like their manager specials and stuff. I mean, you could just totally envision, you know, like how Joe described it in the books, and then there it is. You see these signs for real. And it just made me happy. I don't know. It sounds goofy to say that, but it just was like,
Oh, yes.
That was another one.
I love how
like
all
a
the
explosion of color
colors.
In there.
It still looks old world, old charm.
Yeah, at
still
first,
looks
like, the color, feet, I was looking at it on my phone, was too small to see. I like it much better and bigger. The first is like, what are they doing? Because it just looked like, it looked too kiddish. But the fact that they kept all, like, the nice ornate, like, rails and all that kind of stuff, mm-hmm. it is nice. It's all old worldly, but really kind of very Fred and George-ish.
Like it. But, so there was another photo.
We also see the necklace. Right? Is that really what opal looks like? I always thought it was black. Isn't that crazy?
Well, yeah. But I think it comes in different colors, though. So I think
it's
one
weird.
Of the... It can come in different
opal right
colors,
now.
But that looks really dramatic like that, though.
Yeah.
I mean, it's nice to see Maggie Smith, too. I thought that was kind of nice.
Oh, I looked it up. For some reason, I got opal and obsidian confused in my mind. But, the opal is exact... Yeah. Exactly right. That is opal.
But
that's called
opal. Put that in there. So that's,
what is it?
Cool.
Read the definition of opal. What?
Well, it's just it's that very very colorful stone that you see in the, you know.
Mm. Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah, I know. Yes.
Yeah, it's got a lot of. Open it up completely. You'll see.
Okay. So continuing on our movie theme, can we talk about this? The next news story, or we still want to talk about photos?
Go for it, sir.
There's a story that we heard, it was at the end of the year, and I thought this was really kind of worth going into. David Heyman gave another interview, and he talked about the splitting again of Deathly Hallows.
Oh,
and he said it's going to be an emotional and truthful break. It's not going to be action-packed. So what do you think about
emotional
that?
Emotional and truthful makes me feel like it's Ron Ronley.
Mm. Could you imagine that cliffhanger?
Yep, I agree.
Or it could be when Donnie dies.
Honestly, as much as I want it to be after Gringotts, so we have a whole movie to be at the Hogwarts, I can see it happening there, because we already had a climactic moment in him getting the Horcrux. So that's something that, like, and when the movie ends there, it's not going to be like, wah, wah. Like, movie's over, see you in a couple months, or see you in a year.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's kind of like, we have some resolution, we have some calm, and then a new conflict is introduced, and that is going to be the, what are we now, and we're all getting upset, and nice cliffhanger. That's a proper cliffhanger. Not just
I can see that, I can see them having this fight in the rain, and like, Ron just leaves, you know?
But you know, but so what it says to me is the breaking,
too.
And so I can see like the last shot of what it could be like, you know, Ron walking away, and that could be really thing. And then you think about how they would open up part two, and you know, the change in the seasons or something. I just think it could be really a really effective way to tie that in. I thought that was, I hope that's what they do actually. I think it'd be kind of really pretty powerful because it just moves right into.
Well, I think about what the opening shot for the next one says.
Or. Silver Doe. Silver Doe. Oh my god, could you imagine that being the opening?
That would be
Doe
awesome.
Coming through the
that
WB logo?
Of, like, you know, I probably won't even, like, film a lot of the tense scenes with just Harry and Hermione, you know, just skip right over it.
They have to go to...
You know what they're going
to
do.
Yeah, I think it'll go from, like, rain to snow or something.
Yeah, that
you know?
Could be a big...
Well, I think that's what's going to... It's going to work out because he's going to be gone.
Oh, right. You're right. Godric's
Hollow. Without Ron, that's big. Godric's Hollow. That's both emotionally big and eventful big because of the fight with possibly Voldemort or whoever. They're going to dilute that somehow and make it just... but then when they get back from that, then we've had like a good 20, 30 minutes without Ron on camera. And then he can come back. So like his being gone actually means something. Not that, he just came right back.
Exactly.
You know what
exactly.
I mean?
Exactly.
Here's a crazy idea.
They could have cut Godric's
Hollow.
They could, actually.
I'm
just thinking about what you actually need for the plot of Godric's Hollow.
Right.
You need Harry's wand to get broken, and that can happen in any way.
They could cut it.
Especially because it's more of a big deal for the book readers than it is for the film goers, because we don't really hear about Godric's Hollow too much in the other films.
Right.
As much as I don't want them to, and I think them cutting the movie where they are lends to the fact that they might keep it, because I think it would be a nice storytelling element to keep Ron out of the loop for at least one act or one event, so that we actually can feel the pain of seeing him leaving.
But see, here's my thing, though. I can't... Oh, go ahead.
Yeah.
No, I was going to say, I agree with this. I could see them cutting them out just for terms of time for films. I know that they're making it two films, but they said that they were going to try and keep them about 2.5 hours apiece. And that whole battle alone, and the last, you know, the whole events in the forest on can be an hour on its own, almost. So I can see them cutting that because in terms of time. I can see the Galadriel Kala just being too much time taken up. Because they had Gringotts. I mean, just think about part two, what happens in that whole, I mean, just huge sequences.
Yeah. It's We're true. Also assuming that that is what I'm coming at. What
no!
if the emotional and truthful break
but
is not
truthful?
Why isn't it truthful?
Okay. It's not
Yeah,
false,
I mean, they're not going to make them live.
But it doesn't
bad
lend,
and horrible?
It doesn't lend for that adjective, in my opinion. Like, when you say that, you don't think of truthful. When you hear Ron and everybody kind of with their frustration about what's going on, that lends for you being
exactly.
Being
they're being truthful to the character that is written. They're not going to gloss over any of Ron's emotion or any of the...
See, like, I personally would prefer it to cut
that Dobby's death,
because the farther away towards the end they cut it,
you have all that time
for
the battle,
more time in the castle. But for some reason, that's just that being truthful. That adjective doesn't really seem to suit Dobby's death. But it's not like it's
fault.
Yeah, I agree.
Right.
Yeah.
He didn't die.
It happened.
He's alive.
Not true. Dobby is not dead.com. Oh my god. I'm
dead. Look
it
up.
Hold on.
I'm sick of Master Pata, so.
I am. I'm looking it right up.
I want to go to casinos.
Dobby's no.
Not dead.
I don't think it exists.
How about Hagrid?
My Dalish is not dead.
Yeah. I don't want it. Somebody else can buy it.
Of course not. He's sitting right here with us.
Actual website.
It's true.
He's not dead. He's in your ear.
You should write a blog, the Dollish blog, but in character.
Make it very mundane, like I went to Walmart today.
I agree.
He does not go. You think he goes to Walmart?
Walmart.
No, it's a good. No, it's always wondered. Can wizards?
Oh, he totally does.
I don't know.
Oh man.
Ooh,
that's the canon conundrum.
Oh, my goodness.
Talking
about
right up.
Intense scenes,
okay,
or maybe not so intense. Guess what,
everyone?
Half-Blood Prince has been rated PG. For
now,
scary,
what the hell?
Yes. For scary images, violence, language. And, okay, go ahead. Okay.
I don't know why everybody's knickers are in a twist.
Wait. So
yes,
I don't understand.
Yes. Has been.
Wasn't the order?
Order
of,
and force.
And Goblet.
Goblet.
And they've been saying, the producers have been saying that they expected PG-3 ratings throughout, which makes me think that they thought they were going to get a PG-13 rating.
I was about to say, well, no one dies in this one. Like, duh, so
well, it's not like a violent,
one.
Bloody death or anything. It's not like limbs
some
are being cut off,
from a building
kids
anything.
Are dying.
No.
Or just the emotional bond that you have with this man, this character that you've watched for the first,
but
5 films. That's okay.
Do you know, I just have a sneaking suspicion that it's just 2009 at the MPAA, and what was PG-13 in 2006 and 2007 really isn't 2009.
But see, my question... Yeah, that's true.
I mean, think about what used to get an R, you know?
Because it gives the warning what it says, John. It says it's rated PG for, and this could be what Melissa was saying, it's rated PG and it has scary images, some violence, some language, and mild sensuality. So...
Mild sensuality.
Mm-hmm.
I like how they said sensuality instead of like.
No, I'm gonna laugh about this for a minute, because we know that in movie 5 there was a very chaste kiss between Cho and Harry. In movie 6 we know for a fact that Lavender propels herself at Ron and makes out for all she's worth, and there are many other kisses happening too. Are they really gonna say that 5 was the more sexual movie? But you know what I'm saying? Like it feels like maybe. The movie is just the movie, and probably the filmmakers are surprised as well.
Well, I was just curious, though, because David Heyman said that they were not assembling the film until right before the film, at the last possible moment, to prevent, piracy. So I wondered, I assume they can put a copy and submit it, but I thought, oh, that means there's a copy of the complete film floating around, and I just...
Members of the MPAA have seen it.
And we've known, too, from his earlier comments, too, that since the test screening in Chicago, that they have done some mild changes to what we heard. But we don't know. But, I mean, I just, I can't imagine, though, that in Fury Scene, it's, you know, you're... Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's gruesome looking, you think, right?
That's the thing. And, dude, I've seen models of these things. They are nasty looking. That was much scarier than anything in 5. What was PG-13 about 5? Think about a person and suck all the moisture out of them and then have them be dead and rotting for about
a
year.
So, like, a creeper?
I mean, they're, it's not like they're dry, like, mummy-like, but they're, like, twisted, withered mummies. It's like skeletons with skin and really contorted and gross.
Totally gross.
Basically. What was, can somebody ask, what was so PG-13 about 5?
All the bloody kids' faces at the end of the ministry, and they're covered in cuts and things.
I think, would it be just the intensity of the fight? The intensity of the thing?
Oh.
Oh, being hunted and chased, I can see that.
Violence.
Adults beating up on kids?
The violence. Which I would imagine a
Looter running around with a bloody lip.
I can see that.
Yeah.
But it sounds like
they're better than Felix Felicia than 6. They don't even get banged up that bad.
No, but what about the cutting of Draco? I mean, is that not just like a horrible...
Oh, yeah, that is intense. We'll probably get rid of that.
Yeah, sucked himself up.
I hope not.
I can't get rid of that because I want to... I love that line about when they talk about Snape doing the counter curse, how it sounded like a song. It was amazing. Ooh. Just because he knew it so well. Like,
He can sing, too.
Yeah. And it seemed to his wand was like knotting the wounds back together. You know?
Yeah.
If they've cut the second Semper scene for that reason, then
well pissed.
Real. I'll even dig into my R's like Sarah Palin. Real pissed. Real. But if not.
But honestly, I think that's a good point that John brought up. Like the adults maybe beating up on kids, a kid fighting a kid, and then a kid fighting monsters. Is one thing, but like having an adult attacking kids,
wait.
Maybe? I don't know. That's the only thing I can think of.
Yeah.
Hang on.
Exactly. A werewolf.
Senator Greyback.
That's right.
They burned down the burrow. Harry and Ginny go chasing off after Death Eaters, and the Death Eaters, I know they confront them at some point because there's, remember that script went online and it was Greyback saying to Ginny, don't you smell clean? Or whatever.
Right. Oh, yeah.
It's suggestive.
I don't get it either, and just the whole idea of a teacher murdering...
I don't get it.
You know, I mean, Snape can...
I don't understand.
You know,
don't spoiler it.
shut up, John.
Well, you know, I just think... I mean, it may not be bloody, but there he goes off the tower.
You know
what's
going to happen? Before?
You know, I
you know
just
what?
Find
Actually,
that
yeah,
emotionally
you know
just very... Wow.
I'll give you guys the real spoiler, you know, because Clubs is back on for this one. Actually, and in tradition, Snape no longer kills Dumbledore. It's actually Hermione.
I was waiting for something about Hermione.
A little different dynamic here. What else can we have Hermione do in this one? Oh, it's have her kill that. Wonderful.
Okay.
Oh, man.
Oh, snart.
Yeah, that's it. She is. She turned out to be the half-blood prince, that's it.
Half-blood prince, yes.
She's the Mystic Kettle of Nackledark. That was the best line of Joe's ever.
Have we heard, though? Did they cut out Buckbeak, you know, and when he's going after Snape? Is that... Do we know if that's...
That's a lot of work for them to do just for one little shot.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure.
They spent so much time on that. You know...
Honestly, after watching the fourth film, because the fourth film was the first one that I saw, the first one that I read the book prior to seeing the film, and I was so disappointed with the stuff that I didn't get to see in the film, that now, whenever they have anything in, I just get so excited. Like, that opal necklace made me ecstatic. I'm like, ooh, they have it in the movie. It's like, well, they have to get something in. But I'm like, I don't care, it's in there, not outside.
Yeah.
So, I'm just genuinely happy when anything is left in.
I love that that's our yard
what?
Now. They have to keep something in, Frankie.
Yeah.
I love that line.
Well, that's
they have to keep something in, Frankie.
We no longer really have that satisfaction at the moment we watch the movie. Anymore, because we know like just about everything that's going to be in the movie before we even see it, because we dissect it so much at a time.
Yeah.
See, I don't mind that though. It helps me appreciate it.
You know what though? When we go in though, it's always it's always a great experience when you go in. I've never felt ruined by all the discussion in the previews we get.
She's
not. You know?
I have sat with you at several of those first times we've seen it, and then you are as excited as anybody else.
Speaking of Tor,
oh, snap.
Tour 2007, Tour 2009 is coming, correct?
This is going to be the biggest tour we've ever
snap,
done.
With the Wampa Willows and the Remus Lupins. We're so excited, oh my gosh.
Shut up.
Are we going to get, like,
actually,
a big band and we can
it's
get Marcus
and it's going to be our biggest
again?
Tour, I think.
We didn't get a color on it this
if
year.
Only
I
we had somebody
to,
that could
draw.
Like
do
that last summer. Well, who could that be? Silly of us.
We should plan for it ahead of time, Frankie, and get, like, a bunch of colors.
Oh, my God. Frankie can draw all over the...
I'll just draw, like, all our food on
it. Oh, my God.
What if you look online? Oh, my God, that'd be amazing. Okay. So, yes, we're doing shows all over the country. Please don't send us all these emails saying, please come to my town. We're trying. Get to as many towns as we can. And we're doing a big podcast at LeakyCon. May 21st, 24th, 2009, and we're doing a leaky mod at AstroCraft.
Cool,
we're happy to announce.
We were able to figure out, yep. Just based on our audience, we were somehow able to have a database of our members and figure out where they lived. We could come up with a way to have, like, a little contest to get as many people from a particular area to say, we want a podcast in our town, and we'll go, and here's our names. And see what we get from that.
Well, we still have our
that's right, yeah,
our survey available, which people should really fill out. Yeah, because it helps us gather your email addresses to let you know when we're in your state. All right, anyway, we'll have a link in the show notes, hopefully, if we can find the survey, and you should be filling that out always, because then we can email you and let you know when we're in town. Leaky Pottercast at LeakyCon, and then a Leaky Mug at AstroCraft, which is going to be, like, at 4 o'clock in the morning, I think. I'm not even kidding. We're doing the midnight.
Yes.
We're all going to see the movie at midnight, and then we're all going back and doing a podcast right after it.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And then I'm going to sleep, so see y'all later.
I'm going to be so excited, and we have coffee, and talk about it.
It'll be fun.
And the very last bit of news this week we have is our Leaky Roundup. Our latest contest this week is Story That Answers a Question. Pick a question from the series up to and including Battle of Hogwarts, nothing past the battle, though, and write a story that answers the question. Contests end January 31st. The first place winner will receive a custom-made wand from Wizard Wood Wands. Wow, that's pretty cool. Also, Joe's Book Nook is reading Sense and Sensibility, which is off to a really good start. We're also staying an extra month with Beetle the Bard Club, so that's open for the rest of January. It's worth saying that we still have lots of forums discussing Harry Potter books and films, but also places to discuss other books and other films, like Twilight in The Wizarding Wireless, current events like the future president of the U.S. Muggle Underground. But that's all for the Leaky Roundup this week, guys. Okay, that's a lot of news.
Alrighty, people. Yeah. I think that's enough for the news.
Okay.
That's a lot of news. Let's go do a Canon Conundrum.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider in spoken word entertainment. Audible has over 35,000 titles to choose from, to be downloaded and played back anywhere, just like Pottercast. Log on to audiblepodcast.com/Pottercast to get a free audiobook download of your choice when you sign up today. Again, go to audiblepodcast.com/Pottercast for your free audiobook.
It's time for Canon Conundrums, where we talk about Canon Conundrums.
Canon Conundrums. So what's our Canon Conundrum this week?
We have a very special Canon Conundrum this week, brought to you by Belle the Cat. no, actually.
A while ago...
Ooh.
Sorry.
That's a cut spot.
I couldn't say it one time.
I've decided that Mooch was going to stare at Jonathan at the end of all my vlogs.
I love it. It's so gratuitous.
It is. Just Mooch just staring. Sorry.
This one is very interesting because a while ago we asked all of you podcast listeners who check us out at podcast.com what would be some good ideas for some Canon Conundruming. And you wrote back in dozens and dozens and dozens of responses. And one of them that we liked was somebody named Icy Moon.
Ooh.
It's a very cool name.
Icy as in, like, I'm looking at, or icy as in, like, this gets cold?
Oh, actually, it's even more clever. It's icy as in cold.
Okay.
And they wanted to know, prior to Book 5, we learned that Snape is good at legitimacy. There are hints that Snape may be reading Harry's mind. However, he doesn't actually perform the legitimate spell. no incantations or wand movements or no flashes of Harry's mind of what Snape is seeing. Is Snape reading Harry's mind, or is it something other than legitimacy? Or is it just Snape being creepily accurate at his guessing, or is he doing some more advanced form of what Voldemort could do? As in, known people are lying. And in addition to that, they wanted to know, regarding Voldemort's ability to tell people are lying, and maybe even Snape's, how can a wizard be constantly using legitimacy in that matter? Are there any other examples of magical abilities that don't require spells or wands?
Apparating,
you need a wand.
Do you?
No. What,
okay.
what about
animagi transformations?
You need your wand for that.
I mean, you need your wand for just about everything. Like, even making
what about a port key?
Potions and
there's
things.
There's some wandless magic, but it's...
I guess it's just an object.
Oh, well, you have to create it when
you
know?
Use
it.
But you're not doing a spell, I think, when you take it.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. There's some, like, they talk about wandless magic in 6 and 7. Like, Harry says, light or something to his wand in 5 or something, right? And it lights.
Oh. Well, he says Lumos, but the wand's close is like inches away from his hand.
It's close enough.
Yeah. So, but see, I guess that he used his wand, so I don't know that it classifies as wandless. He just wasn't touching his wand.
Yeah.
Hmm.
But I always was I didn't realize that you can't apparate or do an animagi transformation without a wand. I guess it makes sense. You just don't need to be holding it to do it, but you need to have it on you.
But right.
Well, the animal can't really hold the wand, so.
But he can't wear clothes either.
So then, how is the animal transforming back? It just, they decide in their mind that they want to transform, and they do it.
And so,
but you can't get there without a wand, so.
Yeah.
It's still, it's like a finite incantatum, I guess, which is probably could be done wandlessly.
Right. Did Sirius have a wand in Azkaban?
No, he
transformed.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Oh, touche. You don't need a wand.
Okay, you don't.
That's definitive proof right there, because there's no way you have had a wand.
No, he transformed. That's interesting that most wandless magic is, like, small, but something so huge as becoming an animagus you don't need a wand for.
Such an intense magical spell that it's not really about channeling it. It's about just kind of... honing it, if that's the right word? Yeah. I don't know.
That makes sense, because you can...
No, I was just saying, because it is, just to further on what you're saying, it's rare, though. I mean, that ability to do become an animagus like that is so rare. So maybe that's why.
Actually, that's a good point.
You know?
Yeah, I think maybe part of the reason that it's rare is that it's very difficult to channel magic without a wand.
Oh, that's a good argument.
The wandless magic. I mean, if you could... I mean, we've only ever even really seen a few people do it, like Dumbledore. I guess it's probably in the movies.
Well,
flicking that candle on and off. Look at me. Let me pull a rabbit out of this sorting hat.
No, you're right, though, because remember, even in the first book, though, remember when Hagrid's talking to him about, like, or maybe it was Dumbledore, somebody's talking about, do you ever do things when you don't have, and Harry didn't have a wand then, and he had his hair grow back? After got cut by from Aunt Petunia.
Oh, that's a good point, Sue.
Exactly.
Yeah, the magic the wizarding children do.
Yeah, Jo addressed that once. She said that when you're young, you can do wild, unfocused magic without a wand, but anything complicated, you would need to channel the energy through a wand.
Yeah, so I think
somebody asked for that once.
I think that's probably a good argument, though, the fact that there is potential to perform magic without a wand, but it's just so wild and chaotic, you need the wand to channel. So that's what that would make an argument that the whole animagus transformation would actually be something difficult for most people to do, because you have to be able to channel that wild magic into something legitimate.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But we're talking about...
What if you transfigured your...
Right?
Yeah, sorry.
No, I'm asking, because that's the same thing. Like, I just think it's the mark of a amazingly advanced wizard.
Right.
Yeah, or at least advanced in that specific field.
Yeah, I like that it would make sense for Snape because of him being such the master occlumens that he is, to have the power of the mind And
it's like what Sue was saying earlier. Like, look who he's up against.
Yeah.
He was up against Voldemort. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like, and he tricked Voldemort. Hello.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He must have been good at it
for years.
So Harry should be.
For years
should
he did
be,
it. I mean,
pretty
his,
easy.
His ability though to concentrate for years and not waver.
And
it's extraordinary. I mean.
And look at the nature of the reason why he was doing it, too.
Yeah.
It wasn't so logical. Like, the nature he did it, it was because he was in love with Lily.
Yeah.
And so you would think that that intense emotion stuff would kind of temper, or would you would think he wouldn't be able to control it as much.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Because it's just so,
mm-hmm.
it's unbridled emotion. The fact he even controlled that and pressed that down under the veil of his occlumency or the legitimacy is very even more impressive, in my opinion.
Because
it's not so clinical and sterile as just logic. It's something as, you know, as irrational and powerful as emotion.
Yeah. Which makes the error, I think, I'd call it an error, in the filming of Order of the Phoenix, when Harry is able to pretty much overpower Snape's ability with Protego, or whatever the hell he used, to get into Snape's mind instead of actually.
That happens in the book. They just use.
He went into the Pensieve to see that.
I know, but in the book he did. He saw a little bit, and then that's when he saw Snape cowering at the table and all that. They just kind of overlapped in the film, which I don't blame him.
I guess you can't argue with canon, but it's just.
Well, I mean, but to your defense, he just caught him off guard. You know, it's one of those things, once Snape realized what happened, it was just, boom, out. It was just a split second. The movie made it look more like he couldn't control it and he was lingering in there. So, yeah, I get that.
Yeah.
In the book, it was just a split second that something happened.
That's right. Hmm.
But, do we ever know, so there's only four known, legitimates in the Potter world? It's Dumbledore, legitimates. So it's Dumbledore, Harry, Snape, and Voldemort, right? Did we decide that? Is it just four? Is it maybe anybody can do it? And we just...
That we know about, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think anybody could probably do it.
It's just a rare form of magic. I would even think that Lockhart was probably decent at it, just because he specialized in memory charms. You know what I mean?
What about Draco?
Draco's
an accomplished occlumens. I can't see him being a very good legitimate.
I would think that, like, in any practicing of occlumency, you'd have to at least have an understanding and experiment with legitimacy.
Yeah,
occlumency is being very good at closing yourself off. With Draco is naturally very good at it. I think he would have to learn legitimacy. I don't think he would necessarily be a good legitimate. Just because it's a good
now, okay. Now, legitimens, it's that comes from the word legitimate,
true. We're all pronouncing this wrong. It's legilimens with an L.
Legilimens?
Legila, reed. From the Latin legere, reed.
Oh, I
from
see.
Reed.
Oh.
Men's mind. Legilimens.
Interesting. I always assumed it sounded like legitimate. And so, it's built.
So I'm like, why is everybody saying legitimens?
Oh,
sorry.
Oh, my bad.
You know what I learned this week about words?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what the origin of the word testimony and testament and testify is?
What?
The word for the male part, apparently, back in the day when you would take an oath or something, a man would basically hold on to his area and during the oath.
That's
where those words originated from.
Mm-hmm.
I bet you Joan knows that one because she's a master of words.
That's correct.
It is. I read it in a book.
I bet you did.
Not even the internet, like an actual book.
Oh my god.
I read.
I really just don't know how to recover from this conversation. I don't know what to respond to.
Anyway, what's true. Occlumency mean?
It's a cloud. A clue is a cloud.
Ocular
or whatever.
Then I take back what I said before.
Glasses.
No, but that's ocular. Occludo is the cloud.
Then I take back what I said before. I don't think Lockhart would have been a good legitimate. He would have been a good occlumens if he had to. because this is understanding and use of memory charms.
That's true.
He had to be somewhat decent at something, because he manipulated that many people on that big of a scale. Not that he's anything worth talking about.
Can you imagine how much more dangerous the Wizarding World would be with the internet?
No. Oh my God, I know.
Can you imagine? Because like learning how to do these spells would be a lot easier than going into the restricted section if you could just go into like
YouTube
websites and say over 18, yes, click, okay. Or Horcruxes, okay, here we go.
Yeah.
It's all right there in front of you.
I have a question for you.
Very dangerous Wizarding World.
This is just a random thing. About,
ooh.
But Snape. So Dumbledore was there when Snape was going through school, right? And this is an advanced form of magic. Do you think Snape was able to do that even back at, like when he was a student at school with the Marauders?
Draco was learning back then. It's possible that Snape, as a smarter student than even Draco, as a half-blood prince, would be able to pick up an ability like that.
I would say that he probably is inclined to it, but never really had the need to tap into it until he was put in the situation that he was in, and then he just found that his nature was, you know, cut out for it, and the situation called for it. So it was kind of like a happy situation or a good situation.
Well, he would have had to. I mean, like, you know, let's forget how old Alan Rickman is for a second. Snape is in like his 30s or something, isn't he?
Right. Well, he was ahead of the right with James and Lupin, right?
He was in their class.
Yeah, he'd be in his early to mid 30s.
Yeah.
Well, that's
and
weird.
Around
how
the time
when book one, so if Harry was 11, and they were what?
Harry
like,
was 11.
They were like 20 when they had the kids. Or how old?
And that's generous. They could have been younger.
Well, was Snape my age?
Because Snape was around with like
he's
had
41 in Goblet of Fire.
Right.
Are you talking about the beginning of book one, like when Harry was just born?
Right, because that's how
Goblet
old like Lucius was.
41.
Right, because that's how Lucius was.
But no, how the hell could he be 41? That doesn't make any dang sense.
Yeah, well, Lucius
Goblet
was
of Fire. Harry is 14.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So at 14 to.
Oh no, maybe he was 35, 36, and Lucius was 40, 41. Hold
right,
on.
Let me
I remember Lucius being older.
Yeah, he was 35,
yeah,
36, and Lucius was about 41. That
yeah,
makes him 21 to 22 when Harry's born.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because he was the older one. He used to tag after. That's like,
sorry.
No, that's fine. But even then, though, I mean,
John,
think about that.
John, you just had a heart attack.
I did. I totally blew my mind. There's no way.
I just find that amazing, though, that
okay.
Here Snape came along, and Dumbledore was not headmaster then, right? He was not headmaster. Oh, he was.
Yeah.
No, he was.
Yeah.
He was. So I just wondered, I don't know,
yeah.
Even then, if he knew that Snape was that advanced. Kind of wondered. Sidetrack, sorry. It's just kind of one of those random thoughts.
No, that's
well,
a good
think
point,
that,
though, because I think
yeah.
Snape, with his, I don't know.
He'd be a standout student, being as smart as potions as he
see,
was.
I don't know if
the
be
best
stand,
in his year.
Stand out because of his desire to be a little, like, Death Eater. You know what I mean?
Well, he was totally reclusive and emo.
He was, but
yeah,
I think that would affect his performance in school. Like, he would. I don't know.
See, I could see him as being one of those really smart kids that just don't really try in other classes because it's not important to them, but they're still actually getting really good at these things in the meantime.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've experienced plenty of those kids.
Yeah.
I bet you have.
I could see him. Obviously, he's a standout student in potions and probably in defense into dark arts. And, you know, he probably, I would think he could have been aura level at most of the classes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Makes me wonder how James beat him out for head of house.
There's
James must
houses.
Have been really
yeah.
good.
One Slytherin, one.
No, head boy. I mean,
oh.
not head of house. Head boy or whatever.
No.
Well, by then, it was pretty clear Snape was a Death Eater.
Yeah.
Or was a Death Eater in
yeah.
training. I don't think they were going to make that guy head boy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess so. Yeah.
I forgot James was head boy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Look at the smartest
yeah,
kid
Remus
at Hogwarts.
Was the prefect.
Right.
Yeah.
I just keep, every time you say head boy, I keep remembering when they're like, they changed Percy's badge to big head boy. Fred and George.
Yeah.
And I love,
okay,
I'm head boy.
This is a separate little quick question that I've never really, I always forget to ask, and I've asked before and I always get the answer. So there's the head of house.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a head boy and a head girl for the school, not for each house.
Correct. Yeah, you got your heads of house and your prefects.
And typically, I would imagine that Ravenclaws would be a lot of head boys and head girls, but from the looks of it, with the track record of the Weasleys and Harry's family, it looks like some Gryffindors can kind of call their own scratches, not just academic.
I don't know what the qualifications are for head boy.
Well, you have to be a prefect.
And head girl. I don't think so.
Oh, I always thought you had to be a prefect.
No,
James wasn't a prefect.
I think it had to do with...
I mean, what would a head girl have
leadership
to do?
Leadership qualities is what I think would be more than just academic achievements.
That's the same thing.
Yeah. That's a good point.
All right, so where are we on the actual central question here? I don't even remember what it is.
Back up.
Are we figuring there's more advanced magic than just the run-of-the-mill legitimacy we know about?
I always assumed that because of the nature of his work and because of the nature of his, not even as a double agent, but as a Death Eater, he just really, it's like when somebody practices piano 18 hours a day. They're going to become really, really good. And I just figure he practiced it a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's like someone who's trained himself in music, and they'll start hearing music where other people wouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
Or like with me, like when I started drawing people, I realized I wasn't very good at it, so I started focusing on features. And now I dissect people's faces when I meet them, and I don't realize it. It's just part of like what happens. And so like it'll bug me like this, who does this person look like? I'm like, oh, he looks like this actor, but it's only his eyes. That's why it bugged me. I couldn't figure it out. So it's one of those things that, like, I don't intentionally go, like, I'm going to see who you look like. My brain just kind of does it. So I can see how Snape, like, he would just kind of, it would be just his nature in reading people, combined with his advanced legitimacy and occlumency, that he would be able to, and I think it's kind of like a, you know, if you drive a clutch, how you have to, like, balance the clutch out when you drive, when you shift gears. Like, if you're that good at illegitimacy and occlumency, you can do a little bit of legitimacy without really letting the other person in, you know what I mean? Or letting them know by just kind of balancing out with a little bit of occlumency. That makes sense?
I mean, especially, exactly, Frankie, and especially in addition to the understanding that magic is possible, that the wand is what channels the magic. In most cases, but it is possible for magic to be produced through the person. I guess if you're that advanced and you're that particularly gifted with it, then it just could become second nature.
Yeah, and another good point I think to bring up would be that other creatures use magic without wands, and that's a moment of strife in that world. It's like, because wizards have wands, and then the trolls, or not the trolls,
the centaurs.
The centaurs and the Gringot goblins, like, that's a subject of contention. Like, why don't you teach us wand lore? And it's like, well, why don't you teach us how to use magic?
Wands?
You use it.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. It's one of those things that, like, I think magic is out there, and just how we tap into magic, we use wands. But other people can tap into magic other ways. So that, I think that does lend to the fact that, you know, you don't have to have a wand to use magic. It's just that's how we do it, and we're adepts to it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it's the midichlorians, personally.
Yeah.
Don't ruin this, Melissa.
I'm just
that's
saying.
All it is.
I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I mean, Harry didn't use a wand to get Dudley behind the glass in the snake area.
That's right.
That was one of those examples of those unfocused things, you know?
Yeah.
But it was focused enough to know that he wanted that to happen and not, like, the whole place to catch on fire or something.
No,
it wasn't even his idea.
He was mad at Dudley.
And it wasn't... Yeah, he was just mad at Dudley. And, like, the unfocused part is that that's not what he consciously decided to do, and it's not... He didn't come up with the idea. He didn't say put him behind the glass. It's just what his magic expressed his feelings.
Isn't it amazing, though, that
that's the unfocused,
that the wizard is capable of doing that? I think that's amazing. I want that.
Yeah.
And just FYI, he didn't put him behind the glass at all. You're confusing the movie with the book. In the book, the glass just disappears and he frees the snake. He wasn't even doing it to Dudley. He was trying to free the snake.
Yeah.
That's what I said, wasn't it? I thought I said that.
No. Mm. I know, it's confusing.
Edit.
My snake goes, thanks.
But I've never actually read book one. I just skipped the Chamber of Secrets after I saw the movie.
Yeah.
Actually, I did, but I did go back to read book one.
All right, well,
times.
I mean, I think we've gotten some answers out of it.
Yeah, I think basically I think some magic is able to do without a wand. I would argue, though, just for the sake of arguing, that to perform a wandless magic with a spell like legitimacy, or even what Harry did with not touching his wand, I think it has to be a spell that you're familiar with. So I don't think you could jump into doing like legitimates without a wand to begin with. Once you're you know what I mean. Once you're more adept to it and kind of understand the mechanics of it, you can use it more freely or abstractly.
Yeah, for real.
But I'm reading into it a bit much, but that's what we do here, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
What about you guys? What are your final thoughts?
I'm so in love with the idea of mama's magic. Just visually, it'd just be so cool. See, like, some, or, like, Dawlish, like, clapping his hands and, like, seeing this huge, like, Patronus fly out. It's just be wild.
It's going to be like Pokemon and Street Fighter blended into one.
Yes, like, energy, like, Avatar just firing out.
Well, for me, I would have liked to have gone into a little bit more, but about, because I think the power of the dark side, Voldemort still amazes me that, like, the Dumbledore is amazing, but look what Voldemort can achieve. And he did that of stuff all the time. Was going after Harry constantly, doing the, you know, I mean, he was like, he is coming. I mean, he knew where Harry was at all times, you know. And I just find that extraordinary. Did he just channel his evilness, that his ability to control the dark side? I hate to use it like that. His channel that natural, you know, give him that extra power. I mean, I just find that, to me, that's we could talk for a long time about that. Did the inherent nature of good and evil and that help with the wandless magic? That part fascinates me. But I think that a lot has to do with the power of the wizard. Okay, done.
Yeah, I think a lot of that has to do also with the fact that it was Harry and not, like, I don't think Voldemort could do that to just any random person.
No, I think with Voldemort, like how he prided himself in experimenting in many magical fields that Dumbledore hasn't, type of thing. Like that, the fact that he's like dabbled in all that dark stuff, and it knitted that unique situation with Harry, but he still was able to, I don't know, use it, and like the fact that it. When he tried to possess Harry in Book 5, and then it was painful and poisonous to him, and then he blocked it in Book 6, but then in Book 7 he is using it again. It makes me think that he learned something else about it. It's just it's really interesting. Like what she was saying, it's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
Well, I think it wasn't so much the fact that it was painful that when he possessed Harry, the nature of possessing him, it was the imagery that Harry shot back through the connection.
Well, that's what I mean. It was painful to him. He's never experienced that type of love or those types of emotions in a legitimate way, so it was painful in the sense that he's like, WTF, what is this? I don't like this. It's uncomfortable.
Yeah. Exactly.
And he's damaged himself so much when you put him in a legitimate situation of concern and care. Like, you know, he was fully Harry, or like, you know, he was experiencing Harry just as much as Harry was experiencing him.
Yeah. Well, and Harry was in that huge moment of grief of having just lost Sirius. And that was what put it over the edge. It's like when he said, and I'll see Sirius again. That was the moment that really just made Voldemort throw up and just...
Yeah, willing to embrace death to see someone.
Exactly. I mean, that's one thing that Voldemort could never understand is... to accept mortality for the sake of loving and missing somebody. It's like two things that he never understood. Complete poison.
Which, I would argue, probably made him stronger in the dark arts, because he had nothing, he had no understanding of what the good is. So he's like, I don't see any value in this whatsoever. That's why he underestimated Dumbledore so much, because he didn't understand what love was capable of. So he's like, you know what I mean? And so that just probably helped him just get stronger in that area.
Yeah. You know, it makes me wonder sometimes when Dumbledore talked about how there are things worse than death and everything. Did we ever decide what that was? Because I have a new theory. I don't know if it's new or not, but... what did we think that was?
I always thought it was going to be disappointing the people you love, hurting the people you love, you know? Like, and plus the afterlife. I mean, God... what happened to him, or what we see of what's going to happen to him in the afterlife.
Yeah.
Oh, you mean like some kind of hell or something?
Worse than death is the absence of love itself. I think just the pure absence of it and not knowing it would be just...
Yeah. I'm wondering now if it's something to do with, like, heartbreak from love. Mm. If Dumbledore's, maybe speaking from experience in this way.
I just don't know if that's what he's talking about when he talks to Dumbledore, Voldemort, because not only does Voldemort not have love, he then can't have heartbreak from love, so he can't warn him that there are things worse for him to experience, because he's certainly not going to experience heartbreak.
Mm.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm.
I don't know if it just... But I agree with you that Dumbledore would think that was worse.
Yeah, well, if there was a way to... I mean, that's pretty much what Harry forced upon Voldemort, was heartbreak.
Mm. Not Voldemort's own heartbreak. He just made him feel Harry's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't know
either.
Maybe that's not a good theory. As far as canon conundrums go, that's probably the best one we've done all week, so it's probably time to...
Are you bringing that joke back every week now?
What's up?
Just kidding.
Nah.
I'm playing.
Okay.
He's playing. All right, well, let's wrap this baby up. It's a big, long show.
Bye. End of the show as we know it.
Oh, no, not again.
It's the end of the show.
It was. This is our first show of the new year.
Yeah, we took an unexpected hiatus.
It's 2009, you guys.
Yes.
2009.
Oh, it's so weird.
I graduated high school 10 years ago, come June.
Oh, doodles. Are you going to go to your 10-year reunion there?
Yeah, if they have one.
Yeah. I think, ever since Facebook, the whole idea of a reunion is so unnecessary.
No, it's true.
Everybody just talks to each other now on the internet.
I have a funny story about hot sauce. Remind me to tell you guys later.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, I guess I can tell you now, it's the drums, huh?
Yeah, it's the drums. Dun, 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 dun,
dun, dun, dun, dun, dun. Okay, I was in class in second period, and these kids were messing around, and it was the end of the period, so I wasn't really upset. I was just calm down. And this kid ordered this hot sauce off the internet, and it's called, Da Bomb or something like that, and it's really, really hot. And so they were all, going, this one kid was going, and I was like, what's wrong? He's like, it's so hot. And I'm like, I like hot sauce. And so I take a little teeny, teeny little drip, and I put it on my tongue, and all of a sudden, my tongue just, it just spreads. It goes, and it's really, hot. But it wasn't uncomfortable, because I only put a little teeny drop. And so then I got a bigger drop, and I tasted it. And it tasted good, but it felt like when you burn, drink a hot cup of coffee and you burn your tongue?
Mm-hmm.
It felt like that for not even a full drop. And then I was good. The rest of the day, whatever, yada yada, I eat lunch. I'm in fifth period and I rub my eye.
Even though
I washed my hands, this stuff was so potent that it would just touch my finger. My eye starts watering profusely. I went over to the sink, I rinse it out, and then 10 minutes later, I rub my other eye with the same stupid finger.
Oh,
I got the second time, it wasn't that bad, but.
I've had incidents like that with hot peppers where I'll touch my eyelid or something, and it was burning and burning and burning until I was able to look up on the internet what helps cancel out that kind of stuff, and the suggestion was yogurt. So I laid on the bathroom floor and dumped a thing of yogurt on my face and just laid there for 10 minutes. But it worked.
Who would know that? Yogurt's a topping for John Noe.
Yes. And then, good thing I don't have any animals that come in the car.
You would look an android from Aliens. Remember the movie Aliens and the androids were filled with that white cream?
Oh, there
goes. It looked like someone shot an android in the head.
Hey, guess what I'm doing this weekend?
What?
I am going to be in a Remus Lupin music video.
What?
You are?
Yeah.
You're doing a music video.
He's shooting a music video.
Where are they shooting a music video at?
I don't know. It's probably not my announcement to make, but...
That's a good point.
I get to be in it. Hey, fandom, guess what this Wizard Rock is doing? I get to be in it. I get to be a character playing something. But I won't say anything more. I won't say what song it is or what it's about, because it's not my thing. But
I guess I'll talk to you in a few minutes and ask you about it.
Oh, you will. I'll tell you.
Good.
Maybe I can get you a part. I know a guy who knows the guy who knows the leader of the show. And good stuff.
Oh, talking about jingle spells, we should maybe release a key to the people who bought the artwork or bought the CD.
Well, no, because CDs are still going out. Guys, no,
probably
if you bought
losing sleep
after,
over it.
Let me explain. If you bought it after December 1st, you were not, and we said this on every page, you are not guaranteed to get your item before December, before Christmas. The rest of them will be going out this month. As soon as my computer gets fixed and I can print out new labels, I will send you the rest, and the rest can get sent out. So please stop with the nasty emails. They are not appreciated. You
Ooh,
have
snap.
To read. Well, you know, it's because they didn't read the page to discover.
Mm.
Well, I ordered it on December 10th. Why isn't it here yet? I was like, if you go and read the page, you will find out, you know.
People.
So please honestly. Be nice. They're coming, they're coming, they're coming, they're coming. I think we have a couple left. I don't know. I should check.
Okay.
I'm not sure.
Well, speaking of trying to fit the rest of those into their packaging.
Oh, that's very bad.
That's disgusting.
Transition.
That's bad
yeah.
transition. We're doing a little fun little thing that Melissa started that I hijacked called Filling It In. Yeah, I sound so excited about it, don't I? I'm just
Yeah,
fitting it in.
You eat it's healthy
fitting and
in.
Stuff. No, it's actually really awesome.
Shut up.
Get off my lawn.
Get off my lawn.
There's two places you can find out more about this. If you go to fittingin.com, you can join a group of fitties. Melissa coined the phrase. It's a ning. It's awesome.
You
can make a social
out?
Network in like 10 minutes.
Yeah, honestly, that's how long it took me. And you just sign up, and you meet, like, right now I think there's, like, 250 other cities, and everybody's sharing their blog posts, everybody's getting excited about health in the new year. This was, if you remember a long time ago, this was a podcast I did with the trainer, and a podcast, you guys know, an hour podcast takes a long time to edit together. 5-minute daily vlogs take, like, no time. So we figured, let's just make it a vlog project, and this started the night before my 29th birthday. I realized that I was going to turn 30 in a year, and I want this to be the year. This is to be it. Come on, enough. You know? So then John is doing it with me. We're posting alternate vlogs on youtube.com/fittingitin, and we're doing, like, fun recipes, and we're sharing our goals and such. And the community, I gotta tell you, it's amazing watching people give each other support, share their ideas for workout songs, share their recipes, commiserate about certain things that always, you know, that get them down, and you sign up, you get your own blog, and your own...
Yeah.
It's really cool.
Well, I have a challenge for everybody, because I was thinking of challenging myself to do this, but now I'm not sure if everybody's earned it yet. But I realized recently, running through the parking garage, that I'm incredibly out of shape running-wise, and it would be all too amusing to see how long it would take me to run a mile. But my plan is to get my friends to drive a car in front of me down the neighborhood and film me trying to run a mile. And I haven't done it yet, because A, I'm sick, and B, I'm still kind of feeling a little subconscious about it. But I figured that if the Fitting It In YouTube channel achieves, what's a good number?
1,000.
1,000 subscribers, mm-hmm. Then that'll be the week that I put up the first video of me running the mile around the neighborhood on camera.
Oh, my God.
Swearing and probably just having an awful time. But all you have to do is log into your YouTube and go to youtube.com/fittingitin, F-I-T-T-I-N-G, it in, and hit subscribe. And watch me in the crazy heat of California. Actually, it's pretty cold.
California.
Yeah, join the community too at fittingitin.com. And consider adding it to your resolutions list of 2009, because we're all having a good time getting
yeah.
healthy and getting motivated. And
it's not about weight loss, it's about health.
Yeah.
And that's the important thing. That's the important thing to take with you. I'm so excited that it's back, because I've missed this community. I knew it started very heavily in the Pottercast audience, which is why I like to remind everybody here, because they were so great when it all originally started, and then I just didn't have the time to keep it up. And now that's it. Now there's, like, a whole community going. It's going whether I like it or not, which is so cool.
Yeah. It's so fun. Everybody's so generous with their comments and things. And it's like, oh, I have a tip. Try this oatmeal instead of that oatmeal. It's like, hey, it's a great tip. And I went out and bought that oatmeal. So if you're wondering about your own oatmeal, you should go to oatmeal.com.
Well, speaking of blogs, John, you have not that much time left in the night. It's Thursday night now. You better post your punishment video on the podcast blog, like, now.
You M&Fers made me go to Chipotle
and
eat just salad and salsa.
Excuse me, who brought this on? Excuse me?
Well, you know, you were the ones that made questions that I had to remember to do, and I didn't.
No, but my favorite part of all of this is that as soon as John didn't answer his second question, because, you know, the Vlogbrothers made popular this idea that projects on YouTube would have rules, and if you broke the rules, your other project partner got to punish you. Like, you had to do something really silly. Like, the first thing they had to do, I think, was they had to wax a chin. And it was really hilarious. And it became, like, popular on YouTube. So we didn't incorporate this into the Pottercast blog because we're not... That's not the aim of the Pottercast blogs. It's not Vlogbrothers times five of us. It's you know... But as soon as I said on the Pottercast blog that, John, you didn't answer the question again, everybody was like, you should just punish him. And then I talked to Fracken too, and I was like, you know what?
Even if it is cliche, whatever, in doing blogs, it's fun. So what, you know?
Yeah, it is fun, I guess. But, whatever, unless it's you.
But Frankie, then I talked to John. And John was like, yeah, I did it, but then something happened and I couldn't get it to upload, and so I just cut that part out. Instead of just re-videoing for 1 minute the little answer to his question and just doing a little extra work, he just cut it out. So I think you have fully earned that punishment, my friend.
Yeah. It would have been like this long, boring video. I was already at like a long point.
The video was like 2
minutes
long.
I'm so sorry. It was, yeah, and it was so much more exciting to watch you walk down Hollywood Boulevard with no relation to Potter whatsoever.
It was a trio, Hollywood Boulevard.
We
went there for the trio. It was the whole point. Did you watch it?
I watched it. I didn't remember the trio.
Didn't you see how much bigger my feet were than Rupert? Hello, ladies.
Whatever. That's one thing of you in vlogs. One thing. I talked to Sue and Frack, and they were behind us.
Alright.
So I announced it. So
if you want to watch me eat the most disgusting, depressing Chipotle experience of my life, you need to go to youtube.com/podcast.
It'll be up.
Yep.
And this time we're going to just make you drink salsa.
Ew.
You guys both go,
that's
ew!
Really gross. Ben Shane is the only person I've ever met in my life who had drank an entire thing of hot Chipotle salsa just for the hell of it.
That's
healthy. Yeah, it's completely gross.
Alright, well, anyway,
it's that time to start twiddling your own dials.
Keep each other safe.
Keep faith.
Good night.
Good night.
We've missed it.
W3.
I confess myself disappointed.
Now, if you don't mind, I'm going to bed.
Great, Scott. No wonder. Look at the time. We've been here nearly 4 hours. Spooky how the time flies when we're having fun.
This week's Pottercast was produced by John Noe and edited by Michael Beckett, Jake Newman, Brianna Roop, and Adam Saunders. Special thanks this week to our sponsor, audiblepodcast.com, and as always to our awesome transcriptionnels, transcribing this and every other episode on pottercast.com. For more information about the show, please visit us at pottercast.com.